Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Around the world, the trip begins with guests. Roam if you want to, roam around the world. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard Peter Greenberg Worldwide. I hope you're having a wonderful time wherever you happen to be on this weekend before Thanksgiving, otherwise known, of course, as the obligatory dysfunctional family get-together that you're forced to go to. But I'm not shy about that. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter at petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. We're going to be talking about a lot of those emails a little bit later on the show. Let me tell you where we are. We've been, of course, everywhere on planes. And this actually involves a little bit of a drive as well. Get out your maps. 38 degrees, 13 minutes north, 122 degrees, 17 minutes west. We are in Northern California, otherwise known as the Napa Valley, coming to you from the Culinary Institute of America at Greystone as part of their flavor celebration here. All the winemakers, all the chefs, they're all here this weekend, on the weekend actually before Thanksgiving. Quite an amazing event. And when you think about Napa, I mean, Napa is, I should say, Northern California, and the wine country is to the U.S. what Provence is to France and Tuscany is to Italy. If you want to get a sense of place, the wine country of Napa really is a vast swath of Northern California, stretching from Mendocino in the north to Paso Robles in the south. But, of course, it is usually defined by only one small part, sort of an iconic part, the 35-mile-long Napa Valley. And we'll be talking a lot about that later in the show. There's so much news going on this week. Everything from a pilot locked in the bathroom and can't get back into the cockpit to passengers being forced to pony up about $200 each to pay for fuel so their plane could take off. How about that? You thought you had baggage fees. and then, wildly enough, for those people who have a sense of history, this coming Thursday is not just Thanksgiving Day. It's also the 40th anniversary, if you want to celebrate these things, of D.B. Cooper. The guy who jumped out of that Northwest Airlines plane down the back stairs of that 727 back on November 24th, 1971. We'll be talking about that and the hunt for D.B. Cooper, which still goes on today. More or less the myth of D.B. Cooper as well. Before we get to that, let me get angry for a second, as if you haven't heard me get angry before. But it's one thing for airlines to say they're making money on ancillary fees. And let's face it, we're talking billions of dollars in checked bag fees and ticket change fees and pillows and blankets and food. We got that. But it's getting out of control. And at the same time, the airline lobby wastes no amount of time in getting to me to try to lobby me to tell me that, you know what, when you actually, analyze airline ticket fares, the ticket cost today 20% less than it did 15 years ago. Well, the official ticket cost does. Especially when you see some airlines, charging $9 a ticket, but by the time you're finished paying for it, it's $400. So your officially published ticket prices are lower than they were 15 years ago. I'll give you that. But remember, the airlines are selling tickets low now because they're making most of their money on ancillary fees. And they're making more money with ancillary fees than they're making actually operating the airline. Now, there's something wrong with that. But if you want to go real wrong, let's talk about our friends at Spirit Air. I've said this before, I'll say it again. They should change their advertising motto to, "We're not happy until you're not happy." This is one of the sneakiest fees in the industry, and it goes against every kind of common sense you can think about. Most of you know that a lot of the airlines are trying to steer you to their online operation so that you're not talking to a human being, you're not having a conversation. And if you do have that conversation, some airlines will charge you as much as $30 or $35 to book a ticket with a human being. Oh, but not our friends at Spirit. No, no, no. They're charging you now up to, are you ready for this? Up to $34 in fees if you want to buy your tickets online. Now, this makes absolutely no sense because, of course, the low-fare carriers always want to do buyer tickets online. They don't want to spend a lot of money for people at the counter. And by the way, Spirit's no exception to that. So here's what Spirit's saying. If you want to book online, up to $34. If you want to avoid that, you need to go to the airport and stand in the world's longest line for that one very tired, lethargic, comatose agent they've got at the counter. Now, this is weird because listen to this. When you actually do the math, their booking fee could be actually 40% or more of the ticket's total price, which goes back to my argument that you can argue all day long that ticket prices are less now than they were 15 years ago. Of course they are, because you're adding everything on after the fact. For example, Spirit actually has an advertised fare, and you know this is garbage, okay? G-A-R-B-A-G-E, garbage. $14 advertised fare each way between Detroit and New York. Well, guess what? Guess what happens after that? $21 in federal taxes and security fees, and the $33.98 usage fee for booking online. I mean, this is nuts. It makes absolutely no sense. And when you start doing the math, the other airline lobbyists will tell you, oh, well, you know, most of our fees are optional. You know, you don't have to eat the food. Well, why would you? You don't have to have the pillow. You don't have to have the blanket. You don't have to have a preferential seat. You don't have to board early. You know what? You're right. They're absolutely right. We shouldn't. Why would you want to board a flight early just to sit there? Unless you didn't want to pay for them to check your bag, so you wanted to get there early enough so you could actually find some overhead space to stow your bag, which is another ripoff. Because anybody who's a smart traveler knows that if you can sneak your bag through security and just get it to the gate, then when they have no more room left on the plane, they have to check it for free. So, of course, everybody is basically going through those security checkpoints of the TSA with everything short of their dead grandmother and a stuffed moose on wheels, by the way, because they want to call it a rollerboard, and getting it on the plane. Now, what does this mean? Huge delays at security checkpoints because the TSA doesn't have enough people to look inside every bag that goes through because these bags are usually jammed with stuff. And then, of course, they're the people who got even smarter, and you got to hand them for this. You got to give them credit for this. This is necessity being the mother of invention. The people who've come up with the Scott E. vest, have you seen this thing? It's a jacket. It's a coat with 22 pockets. You get where I'm going? Yeah, you wear your luggage. You pack everything in the coat. Put on the coat, just take it off to go through security, put it back on, and get on the plane. Now, the downside of that, you look like the Michelin tire man. I mean, you are the ugliest passenger I've ever seen. The upside of that, you're saving $50 a flight by not checking bags and paying for it. And then, of course, that thing still has to fit in the overhead compartment. And I'm telling you, you got it. It looks like, for those people who are old enough to remember the clown named Emmett Kelly, that's what you look like with that jacket. Okay, so the airlines have created this mess, and it is a total mess. And in the meantime, you know what? They're making tons of money, and we're still sitting in that center seat next to the two sumo wrestlers. Well, good luck. All right, folks, when we come back, we're going to talk about pilots locked in bathrooms and some other crazy things like ponying up to pay for your flight before it can even leave the ground because they didn't fuel it. Back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide from Napa and the Culinary Institute of America right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
TravelGuard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from TravelGuard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour on this beautiful weekend in Northern California from the Culinary Institute of America, the Greystone Mansion here in Napa Valley, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. We got lots of emails to get to a little bit later in the show, but there's just so much happening this week, so much of it weird, and so much of it weird and funny. And who better to talk about that than one of our regulars on the show, who writes the column AskThePilot.com, our good pal, Patrick Smith. Hey, Patrick.
Hi, Peter. Nice to be back.
Yeah, so let's start out with the crazy stuff. The pilot locked in the bathroom and can't get back in the cockpit. What was that all about?
Well, actually, Peter, if you will allow me, let me throw something in before we get to that ridiculous story.
Okay.
And it is ridiculous. Because something more serious happened recently that really went all but unnoticed in the press. I'm talking about the November 12th anniversary of the 10th anniversary of the crash of American Airlines Flight 587.
Yeah, you're right about that, because that was the one that was going to the Dominican Republic 2 months after 9/11, and that's when the tail fell off on its takeoff. Yeah,
it was a terrible catastrophe, but it also was the last large scale crash involving a mainline U.S. airline. Since then, there have been several terrible accidents involving regional planes, and a boy was killed when a Southwest jet overran a runway in Chicago. But for the major carriers, 10 years without a large-scale crash is the longest streak in aviation history.
Amazing, amazing, amazing. And I know the crash that you're referring to, the Colgan Air crash near Buffalo, but other than that one and one, I think, Comair in Kentucky.
There have been a few. There was a U.S. Airways Express crash in, I believe it was North Carolina, I think, in 2002.
Right.
But the majors have been catastrophe-free, and this is interesting in light of two things. First of all is the carrier's financial woes over the past 10 years, five major carrier bankruptcies and so on and so on, and also people's general distrust and contempt for the airlines. Despite all of this, they've maintained this impeccable record, and it's gone all but unnoticed. And how we got here is through better training, better technology. You know, we've engineered out what used to be a lot of the most common causes of accidents. And also, yes, I have to admit, we've been lucky. No denying that. But we've also been good.
Oh, no, no doubt about it. And you know what? Credit where credit's due. Although I will tell you this, and you and I have talked about this before, the absence of an accident should never presume the presence of safety. We have to maintain this. And it's the maintenance of that level that really is the challenge from now on, considering all the economic challenges.
That's absolutely true. I mean, this isn't to say we should rest on our laurels. We need to be proactive and keep this streak going as long as we can. Now, getting to the laboratory story.
I got to tell you, Patrick, this is a lot more fun. I mean, my God, the guy's trapped inside the bathroom while the co-pilot's circling above LaGuardia on a Delta flight. I mean, you can't make this up.
It was a Chautauqua Airlines Delta connection. You know, when this story first broke, I rolled my eyes. But having heard the details, on the whole, I think they actually handled it pretty well. What's the protocol if you're a pilot and you're trapped in the lavatory? Well, there isn't one. You know, it comes down to common sense. If the door's really jammed, you break out of there. That shouldn't be too difficult. The doors are pretty flimsy.
Right.
The problem was, in this case, a passenger, I believe on his own initiative, started knocking on the cockpit door, attempting to explain to the two crew members up front, the first officer and a flight attendant, what was going on, because now there were no other crew members in the cabin. Presumably, he was just trying to help out, but put yourself in the situation of imagine you're the first officer and the flight attendant, and now somebody with supposedly a thick foreign accent, whatever that means exactly, is knocking on the door saying, oh, the captain's trapped in the bathroom. Well, yeah, sure he is.
That's like saying the dog ate the homework.
You can't blame them for being suspicious. And one thing led to another. An emergency was declared. And eventually the captain got out of there. And when he did, the crew radioed ahead that the situation was resolved and there was no threat. Really, that should have been the end of it. I don't think this should have been in the news, but no real surprise that it was.
Well, no real surprise it was, because when something like that happens, people pull out their cell phones and they start. It becomes viral, but it was certainly an entertaining story. We'll give it that, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And thank God it wasn't on Ryanair, because they would have charged him to use the bathroom. No, just kidding.
€5, I think, right? And then another 10 to get out of the bathroom.
Exactly. See, that's the key. You see what you've done, Patrick? You've given the guys at Ryanair now an idea. They're going to charge €5 to get in and €10 to get out. Stop that.
He doesn't need my ideas. My ideas. He has no shortage of his own crazy schemes.
Hey, let's change gears again and talk about this crazy charter flight in Central Europe, where the pastors literally had to go off the plane and go to ATM machines to get about $200 each to be able to pony up, I think, what, $30,000 to buy fuel so they could leave.
And believe it or not, that's not the first time this has happened. But every time it's involved what I would call marginal airlines. This airline was so obscure that I've never heard of it. And I've been around airlines since I was a little kid. I read airline books at night before I go to sleep. I'm an airline geek.
Me too. And
I've never heard of this carrier. Trust me, it's obscure.
Yeah. But it reminds me of another story that goes back to 1985 with the hijacking of the TWA plane to Beirut. Mm-hmm. And the flight attendant, Uli Derrickson, they get on the ground in Beirut. They have to refuel. And nobody wants to refuel them because nobody has any money. And she had her Shell credit card, her regular Shell credit card that she uses to get gas. And so she takes her Shell credit card out. This is the flight attendant from TWA, gives it to the guys on the ground in Beirut, and they refueled the plane.
Yeah, what an amazing story that hijacking was all the way around.
Yes.
Many Americans have forgotten about that odyssey, but Google it. Do some reading about it because it was absolutely remarkable what happened.
That's where they killed the Marine, the Navy diver on the ground as well. But one of the wildest stories, and in fact it affected me, was when this hijacking was going on, Patrick, I had just flown to London and then to Athens to get on a ship to do a story. And British Airways lost my bags. And so we left on the ship, and our next port was going to be Civitavecchia, which is the port city of Rome. And on the ship, we got a telegram from British Airways saying, hey, we found your bags. And we only found one of your bags. They'd lost two of them. We found one of your bags, and we're putting it on the first available flight to Rome. That was the TWA flight. Bags never came back. My bag ended up in Beirut. And then finally, as I'm coming back from the cruise, we get another telegram from British Airways saying, oh, we found your second bag, and we're sending it back to California. And they put it on PSA, the old airline that we love and based in San Diego, and they lost it in Stockton. So I'm done. And by the way,
your luggage and not you.
That's right. But you know, that was the moment where I said, from now on, I'm not checking bags. And that's what started my entire love affair with the door-to-door courier services, otherwise known as FedEx and UPS. But I mean, there you go. Amazing.
Yeah,
and last but not least, well, speaking of the hijacking, a little bit later in the show, we'll be talking to the author of Skyjack, The Hunt for D.B. Cooper, because this coming Thursday on Thanksgiving Day is the 40th anniversary of that event. Speaking of a guy going off the back of the plane with bags.
Yeah, that was, I believe, the 70s?
Yes, 1971, November 24th.
The TWA Odyssey was 1985. I mean, this was all part of what I like to call the golden age of air crimes, back when there were hijackings and bombings and airport attacks. You know, it seemed like every other day throughout that era. You know,
it's true.
You know, we worry about it so much more today, but these things actually were much more common years ago.
They certainly were. In fact, in 1978, I know I'm dating myself now, but I went down to Cuba to interview Castro. And this is at a time when people were hijacking planes to Cuba all the time. And I found out through a friend of mine and another source that deep in the heart of Havana, there was an old hotel, and they called it the Hijack Hotel, because that's where Castro took all the hijackers and made them live there. And I said, I got to find this place. This has got to be the weirdest hotel ever. And I actually found it. And I went in, and here are all these crazy Americans, totally loony, sitting around playing games of hearts. And I'm sitting there talking to them, saying, excuse me, now, where were you trying to go? He said, well, I hijacked the plane to Algeria. And the next guy said to him, you idiot, a DC-9 can't make it to Algeria. I mean, it was totally bizarre. It was like Fellini was in on this one. Anyway, lots of stuff in the news. Patrick Smith, as always. And, of course, let's not forget, 10 years without a major fatal accident with the American carriers. Thank you for reminding us. Again, you can read them at askthepilot.com. Back with more from the CIA. Yes, that CIA in Napa right after this.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg coming to you from the Napa Valley, and especially a very special part of the Napa Valley called the CIA. We're going to talk about that in a little second. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me to peter at petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. As I said earlier, we're talking about a 35-mile-long Napa Valley. And 485,000 acres, just 45,000 acres that are actually planted in vineyards. And here's a specific stat that really surprised me. Napa Valley only accounts for 5% of the total vineyard acreage in the United States. But where we're coming from here is a very special place. And, of course, we're here for the big flavor celebration here with all the chefs and all the vintners. And joining me now, somebody who knows a little bit the history of this location, Rebecca Yerger. Hey, Rebecca, where are you?
I'm actually at home right now, but you're calling me.
I am calling you. We know where you are. We know you
are.
Yes. But let's talk about this building that we're in, because I've heard three or four different stories about who built the building, how it was started, this incredible stone mansion.
Well, actually, it was built, I do believe, in 1888, and it was built by William Bourne. And he was a capitalist, that's what they called them in the day. Basically, he had money, and he owned...
Oh, he was one of the 1%. He was one of the 1%, okay.
I guess so. Anyway, he owned a silver mine that was called the Empire Mine, and that was located in the motherlode of California. And that's where he, you might say, garnered all of his money. And actually, it was family money. And he went on to build another well-known, you might say, historic mansion in California. It's in the peninsula area of the Bay Area called Filoli.
Now, let me ask you this. When we have a situation like this, most people who don't really understand Napa and understand the scope of things, how many different wineries are we talking about?
Currently or historically?
Currently,
I think there's well over 300 wineries within the Napa County, you might say, boundaries. And historically, there were just about as many. Most people aren't aware of the fact that Napa County was a wine region of the 1800s.
And what people don't realize as well is that Napa is not just a wine lover's dream, it's few people know the region is also the home to a thriving craft beer industry, too.
That's right. And we had brewmasters in our history as well. We had many, they were primarily German immigrants that came in. They were trained brewmasters in Germany, and then they came here and started their craft as well.
What's the biggest thing, Rebecca, what's the biggest surprise when people come to Napa that they're not expecting to see?
The biggest surprise... Oh, wow. as far as viticulture, maybe how many, how much vineyard is grown here, how extensive it is. As far as beyond viticulture, that there are other things, that there are thriving communities here, and that not everyone owns a vineyard. That's always a surprise to a lot of people.
Are you sure about that?
Yes, I'm sure, because I know I don't.
But, but you would think that, because when you get out in your car and you start driving around, you're surrounded on every side, on almost every road, by vineyards.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very true. And actually, our first vineyards were planted in 1838-39, which was many years ago, obviously, by our first settler, non-Indigenous settler to the area, and that was George Yount. And there's a town named after him, Yountville.
Well, of course. And when you think about how long ago those vineyards were planted, what happened during Prohibition? What did they do?
Well, there were a number of things that happened that started to diminish the number of vineyards here in Napa County. Long before Prohibition, there was phylloxera, which is a plant louse, and basically it just kills off the vines eventually or diminishes their productivity. And that decimated the local vineyards, many of them, not all of them, by about 1893. And as far as Prohibition, a lot of people, you know, a lot of those who owned vineyards decided that they would pull out the vines that they had that were wine grapes, and they planted either table grapes or they started planting the prune, which became our other purple harvest here in Napa County.
Ah, it reminds me of the Coors Brothers in Colorado that during Prohibition, they just turned everything in and they made malted milk balls.
There you go.
See? Well, necessity being the mother of invention. I love it.
Exactly. Go ahead.
And when you have so many different chefs and winemakers in one place, because most people come up to Napa, it's like a weekend thing. But I tell people, no, don't go up on the weekend. Go up during the middle of the week. It's a better deal.
I think that's a good idea because, there are fewer people on the road as far as visitors.
Yes. And by the way, when you talk about fewer people being on the road, let's remember those two very famous words, designated driver. We're going to be doing some tastings. Rebecca Yerger, thanks so much for joining us today. And when we come back, 40 years later, the hunt for D.B. Cooper continues. Happy anniversary, Mr. Cooper. We'll be back with more from the CIA in Napa right after this.
Now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Travel Guard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
Welcome aboard. 43 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you on this pre-Thanksgiving weekend, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We're coming to you from the Napa Valley and the Culinary Institute of America. We'll be talking about that a little bit later in the show, but I would be remiss if I didn't at least acknowledge an anniversary, the 40th anniversary of the skyjacking of Mr. D.B. Cooper above the skies of the Pacific Northwest. And how appropriate, there's a book out right now called Skyjack, The Hunt for D.B. Cooper. The hunt still goes on, and the author, Jeffrey Gray. Hey, Jeffrey.
Hey, Peter, how are you?
I'm okay. You know, I covered that story. I was working for Newsweek at the time, and it was just an amazing story about how this guy got the pilots of the plane to slow the plane down to just above stall speed and basically lowered the rear stairs of that 727 and put on that backpack and just walked on out.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, going in the research for this book, you know, I went through all the clips and all the TV reports, and, you know, here people thought this guy was a master criminal to be able to engineer this hijacking and to engineer this commercial flight in such a way that he could ransom the passengers for a small fortune in cash, strap it to his body, and then just disappear by jumping out over the most remote part of our country with a parachute that he had convinced the FBI to give him. And I think what's so incredible about the crime, I mean, the crimes happen every day in this country, but, you know, why are we still talking about this one? Why, 40 years later, has the crime captured our imaginations, and the hijacker himself is turned into this kind of cult hero, almost like this strange kind of Robin Hood of the Pacific Northwest.
And then Jeffrey, you know, every once in a while, somebody will be camping and find a tattered $20 bill near the river, and all of a sudden that becomes, aha, we found the money.
Right. Now there's perennial burps of potential, you know, surprises, and none of them have panned out.
Now, what's the significance of Seat 18E?
Yeah, Seat 18E is ground zero. Seat 18E is where it all happened. You know, it's where at 2:53 p.m. on the night before Thanksgiving, 1971, a guy who called himself not D.B. Cooper, but Dan Cooper, sat in a seat, and from that seat he approached the stewardess in the rear as the plane was taking off, and he said, "Miss, I have a bomb here. I would like you to sit by me."
There's a come on line.
Absolutely. I mean, she actually thought he was hitting on her because, you know, this was the time in the 70s, you know, with stewardesses wore, you know, very alluring clothes, and there was a lot of sex appeal to that job and in that moment. And so she ignored him. She thought he was joking, and he clearly wasn't.
Now, based on all of your research, I have to ask the inevitable question. Do you think he's still alive?
You know, it's tough to say. I mean, you know, for this book, you know, I spent 4 years researching it, and I was the first person to actually get access to the FBI files, the exclusive, confidential D.B. Cooper case files, which is what a lot of the book is based on. And from that, I was able to recreate just a minute-by-minute accounting of actually what happened. And using that information and lots of other sources, I came away with the opinion that the hijacker is most likely dead now, because he would be probably in his 90s. So you never know, but you know, he's past the life expectancy. However, one of the things that I feel like I was able to ascertain is that the area where his parachute came down was in a space that was a lot different than what people thought it would, and it's very likely that a hijacker actually survived this jump.
Wow. What's amazing about this is, I keep on asking the question, is there a statute of limitations? If he was alive now and he was actually captured, could they still charge him with a crime?
Well, you know, there was a statute of limitations for air piracy. It was 5 years. And so what they did was the FBI indicted him as a John Doe. So the warrant is still out for his arrest. And if he, you know, he was able to be ascertained, if we did find him, he could be arrested. However, one of the things that I also learned in researching the book is that the FBI, the evidence that the FBI is holding and the evidence they collected from the plane is so weak forensically that it might be impossible for us to ever prove without a doubt who Cooper was. And one of the things that I'm doing to celebrate the 40th anniversary is I'm hosting this D.B. Cooper National Convention in Portland, Oregon on November 26th, and Cooper sleuths.
Hold on, Jeffrey, stay with me 1 second. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, a little bit more with Jeffrey Gray and the hunt for D.B. Cooper. Stay with me.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg coming to you from Napa Valley in the Culinary Institute of America at Greystone. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And before we celebrate with wine, we're going to go back to our good friend Jeffrey Gray, the author of Skyjack, The Hunt for D.B. Cooper. Jeffrey, you know, when we last left off, we talked about the thin forensic evidence that they have that even if he were alive today, they'd probably have difficulty convicting him, right?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that I found in researching was that probably the best evidence, or if not the only evidence that we might be able to ever use to ascertain without a doubt the identity of this man, were the 8 Raleigh filter-tipped cigarette butts he was chain-smoking during the flight. The guy was a chain-smoker who was smoking cheap coupon cigarettes. And, you know, buried in the cotton fibers of those filters could potentially be a good DNA sample that our, you know, brainy scientists now working at Quantico could extract a full DNA code from. But believe it or not, one of the things I found was that those cigarette butts are actually missing from the FBI's possession. Nobody knows where they are.
That, well, wouldn't be the first time evidence was lost. The other thing that's interesting about it is D.B. Cooper or Dan Cooper was, what about a 95% chance that was an alias too, right?
Definitely. There's two stories here, okay? And there's the myth of D.B. Cooper, this sort of debonair, swashbuckling sky pirate who we've come to, almost mythologize. I don't know what the word is, but we've made him into a myth. He's become our legend. And there's also the story of Dan Cooper, the guy who actually boarded the plane. And what I found is that those two stories are really different. I think that the legend of D.B. Cooper is the guy courageous and brave, you know, willing to take that incredible jump and commit the perfect crime. And from some of the stuff that I found in the FBI files and in other places is that the true story of Dan Cooper is one that's very different. And it's actually a story about a guy who is a sad loner, someone who's depressed and most likely suicidal. And I think that his effort to take over that plane wasn't necessarily his way of committing the perfect crime. It was actually his way of, through a failed life, trying to achieve just one fine thing.
And this was possibly inspired by what, a French comic book?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that the new clues that we found is that, and this is in recent years, and, you know, there's a whole network of Cooper sleuths out there, and one of the things I'm doing, I mentioned this briefly, but, you know, in honor of the 40th anniversary, all the Cooper sleuths from around the country are meeting in Portland, Oregon on November 26th for this symposium that I'm hosting, and we're all going to be discussing the new clues. And one of them we're definitely going to be discussing and people are going to be presenting on is this comic book, a French comic book named The Adventures of Dan Cooper. Nobody for 39 years really knew what the name Dan Cooper meant, and now we do. He's a comic book hero. This comic was never translated into English. So the question becomes, well, why did he use the name Dan Cooper? And it was a French comic, and believe it or not, what the comic book hero did was fly airplanes and jump out of them with parachutes.
Oh, well, there you go. Hey, by the way, a little-known fact about the aftermath of D.B. Cooper is something called the D.B. Cooper switch. And I've actually talked about it on the air before. It was put in on all 727s and all MD-80s or DC-9s that had the rear lower staircase that went out the back of the plane. And it's actually this necessity being the mother of invention. It's actually activated by the wind. It only switches over when the plane's in flight because the force of the wind moves it to the on position. And what that does is while the plane's in flight, it literally locks the rear stairs. They cannot be lowered. It's sort of like a latch on the door. And so you could never lower the rear stairs while the plane is in the air.
Yeah, that's true. I think the D.B. Cooper vane is what the patent says, and I'd love to be the guy who owns that patent.
Although, unfortunately, there are not that many rear stairs on planes anymore because they're getting rid of the DC-9s one by one, and the 727s aren't flying anymore. They're basically in museums. So no more rear stairs. So if you had the patent, you already cashed in the money. You're done.
Right. And if you think about boarding an airplane and jumping out of it, you might want to think again. I mean, you know, the impact of the Cooper case, too, also, you know, our airports now, you know, the sterile airports that we have, the retina scans and all that, our modern security airport age is really spurned by the Cooper thing. Oh, and one of the things I also found was that D.B. Cooper spurned a bunch of different copycat parajackers, people who actually tried to do the exact same things he did. And but there's one person that got away, and it's the only unsolved hijacking in the world, ever.
Amazing. Again, the name of the book, Skyjack, The Hunt for D.B. Cooper, the author, Jeffrey Gray. Jeffrey, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate that. And when we come back, we're going to be talking a lot more about Napa, but also a report live from the scene in Bangkok. What's going on with the flooding in Thailand? Has it gotten any better? We're hoping that it has, but it's been pretty devastating over there. We'll be back with more Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the Napa Valley, the CIA at Greystone, right after these messages. Again, 40th anniversary of D.B. Cooper. Who knew? Back right after this.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com. We'll be right back. Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard Peter Greenberg Worldwide on this weekend before Thanksgiving, otherwise known as your dysfunctional family get-together. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. For those of you who are wondering where we are, get out your maps. We're at 38 degrees, 13 minutes north, 122 degrees, 17 minutes west. We are coming to you from the Napa Valley. And in fact, we're coming to you from the Culinary Institute of America at Greystone for their big flavor celebration with all the winemakers and all the chefs. And for those of you who really want a sense of place, let's call it what it is. You know, Tuscany is Italy when it comes to wine, and Provence is France when it comes to wine. Well, guess what? Northern California is not just wine country, it's Napa. That's how people know about it. Even though wine country in California stretches from Mendocino down to Paso Robles, it's that 35-mile-long Napa stretch that really defines how most people look at wine in the state of California. And we're going to talk a lot about that during the rest of the show, but lots of other stuff in the news, one of which is a bizarre thing. And just when you thought things were settled, well, guess what? Wake-up call for the TSA. What happened this week? The European Union actually banned the X-ray body scanners at airports throughout Europe. And they're called backscanning machines. Why are they banning it? Because their own research shows that radiation emitted may cause cancer. Well, wait a second. Haven't we been told for the last year from the TSA that the amount of radiation you're getting from those machines is so small that's the equivalent to, you know, flying on an airplane for the whole day at altitude? So what's the answer, guys? Now, there are 500 of these machines at airports in this country. What's the TSA going to do about it if the European Union has banned them there? You know, one of the things I talked about with John Pistol, great name for a guy running the TSA, about what they are concerned about is the lack of a unilateral application of security at airports around the world to match our level of security. And I've gotten so many emails from our listeners who go, wait a minute, why don't I have to take my shoes off in Europe? Or why don't I have to take out my laptop in Europe? Or why don't I have to take off my jacket in Europe or other locations when, in fact, you have to do it here? It either, you know, the point is the presumption, right? The presumption is that once you clear airport security in one country, you've cleared it throughout your flight. And that's really the way it's been. So if you're having a situation where one of those protocols, one of those major protocols is being banned, what does that say or not say about what they're doing in terms of getting that unilateral application? The answer is it's a rhetorical question. The answer is they're not. And so there you have that. The other thing in the news, of course, American Eagle forced to cough up $900,000. That's right. The DOT finally wrote one of those traffic tickets for the tarmac delay situation, a $900,000 fine against American Eagle for keeping hundreds of passengers stuck on a plane in Chicago earlier this year. Now, it could have been a whole lot worse because bottom line is, if you understand the tarmac delay rule, it basically allows fines of up to $27,500 per passenger. Multiply that by 600 and you are a major million-dollar fine here. But at least that's the first of its kind. And what's interesting about it is not just the amount of it, but how it's being implemented. They're actually allowing the airline to split the fine, to pay about $650,000 in cash. The other $250,000 is actually going back to the passengers. Gee, what a concept, in the form of either vouchers or frequent flyer miles that, of course, they can never redeem. But at least it's a start, and it's a wake-up call for everybody. So bottom line there is you have an opportunity to at least invoke the rule. And now, what's going to happen with JetBlue? That's what happened back in October at Hartford, where a lot of passengers are stranded, including on one JetBlue plane, for 7 hours. What's going to happen with those guys? I'm one of those people who believes that they're not going to get fined because it was a clear-cut case, at least in my investigation, of the airport messing up, not the airline. The airport accepted planes that were diverted there when they had no infrastructure or staff to handle it, and that's why these guys got trapped. Now, there was another mistake that was made in my book, and that is the captain of the JetBlue plane, this is the one that kept the people on for 7 hours, didn't really declare an onboard emergency. He was talking to the tower, calling his company, can you get somebody out here? All he had to do was make it a 911 call to local fire departments and say, we have an onboard emergency. They would have scrambled those departments and people would have gotten off that plane. The other option, and this is where a lot of people are telling me I'm on thin ice. I don't think I am. The other option is this. If you're stuck on a plane for more than 3 hours and nobody's doing anything for you, you have my permission. This is my green light to you to make your own 911 call and declare your own major medical emergency. It's called chest pains. Okay, you're having chest pains. And that will scramble the troops and get you off that plane. And later on, when they ask about what you were really sick of, you could basically say you were being sick of being on the plane. And there's not a judge in this country that would throw the book at you because there's a 90% chance that that judge was sitting next to you on the plane. He was stuck too. One more thing I want to talk about, because it's a regular topic on this show, which is airlines charging for checked bags, and even worse, charging people for being over 50 pounds in each bag. And once you're over 50 pounds, you could end up paying $500 for a bag if you're not careful. Here's the thing. When you go to the supermarket and you buy a pound of apples, or you buy a pound of steak, or you buy a pound of fish, they put it on a scale. And you'll notice that on that scale, there's a little sticker there from the Department of Weights and Measures that scale was inspected by the city or by the state. And the real question I have is, who's inspecting the scales at the airport? I mean, it's your word against the airlines. And so my feeling is this. There are a number of different devices you can actually buy for a very little amount of money. There are little portable scales that actually hang on the handle of your bag. And you'll know before you ever leave home how much that bag weighs. And bottom line is, it's then your word against theirs, but you can actually show it to them. Because the actual numbers that are involved, once you get over that weight amount, are rather substantial. So bottom line is, I want somebody to call me up and tell me who's inspecting the scales at the airport. Because my feeling is, not a lot of people are doing that. Speaking of airports, one of the all-time great myths in the world, and I know I'm going to get mail on this, but too bad, duty-free shopping. Is there such a thing anymore? I want you to tell me what you think. When was the last time you bought anything at duty-free that you actually thought was a bargain other than alcohol in Japan? Seriously, you tell me, when was the last time you actually got a deal at duty-free? I love going to Hong Kong where they have duty-free stores at the airport. All of Hong Kong is duty-free. Who are they kidding? Okay, am I like getting angry about stuff today? You bet I am. Anyway, we'll be back with more from the big flavor event in Napa Valley. At the CIA at Greystone. More with Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the wine capital of America right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg coming to you from the big flavor event in Napa Valley at the CIA at Greystone. How about that in one sentence? I'll explain that later. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem, and we'll solve it right here on the air. As if you've been following the news, then you know that there have been some serious problems in Thailand, especially with flooding. And that is near and dear to me, of course. For many of you know, I also have a house there. And we've been monitoring the situation. Many of you have called in and asked, is it okay to go? Is it okay to travel there? I'll actually be coming there later this month, actually earlier next month. Who better to tell us what's going on than the general manager of probably one of the most iconic hotels in the world, the legendary Oriental Hotel, and a good friend of the show's, Jan Gussing. Hey, Jan, how are you?
Hey, Peter, doing fine. Thank you.
So give us a situation report on what's going on there. I know, based on your emails to me earlier in the week and last week, that it's been pretty severe. A number of your employees have lost their homes or were flooded out. We're actually living at the hotel. You're actually on the river, so you're probably in a better position than most. But give me a sort of report about Bangkok in general.
Yeah, as you know, Peter, Bangkok is a very significant city, and there has been a lot of confusing information out there as far as which areas have been affected and which have not. The Oriental has not been affected. La Grande Dame has kept her feet dry, so to speak, and the area surrounding it as well as the center of the city. I live in Bangkok, as you obviously know, and driving around, I myself in Bangkok center, etc., have not seen a single flooded street. Neither has the airport been flooded, nor the connection street to the airport. In other words,
you're saying that the airport,
you wouldn't notice it.
Right, you're saying that the airport is open and operating, and I have to put things in perspective, and I think, Jan, you'll agree with this. When they had demonstrations in the street last year and they had one or two fires, that was really confined to like a 4 or 5 square block area. Just like when you see the protests on the streets of Athens, that's of a 4 or 5 square block area in front of the Grand Britannia Hotel. It doesn't affect the rest of Greece, and the same must be true of Bangkok.
That's exactly right, Peter. I avoided that area, of course. But other than that, I stood every day in the same traffic jam, went grocery shopping, and lived my life. There was really not an immediate effect on anyone who was, you know, living here and not going to that area. Much the same with the flooding. The situation is a little bit different when you look to the outer skirts of Bangkok. And just today, I went on a 12-hour trip with a group of my staff on a truck, on a 10-wheeler truck, to visit 7 of their homes that had been completely flooded.